In the short four-month span of the interior Alaska summer, nearly 21,000 persons either visited, attended a conference, or enrolled in a class on the University of Alaska campus. They represented virtually all points in the state and nearly every area of the nation, plus a number of foreign countries as well. This is our story today, the university's summer sessions, what they are, who participates, and what happens. It's all for you because this is your university. As the University of Alaska continues to expand to meet the ever-increasing demands for additional services throughout the state, it is interesting to pause from time to time to review those activities which comprise major segments of the total university program. This report constitutes a review of one such segment. Who visited the campus this summer? Students and scholars, educators, government officials, teachers and tourists, in short, people from all walks of life. Whether here to enrich their intellectual interest or to take a stroll on the campus, they came, and they came by the thousands. People such as Dr. Edward Teller, often called the father of the hydrogen bomb, and others from the Union of South Africa to Great Britain, the Soviet Union, France, Italy, and Germany, from Japan and Greece and Turkey and Canada, from Mexico and Greenland and Australia, they were here. All conferences held on the campus at college are coordinated by the Department of Summer Sessions, Conferences and Short Courses. The department is headed by Dr. Wendell Wolf, who points out that the university is a very logical place to hold virtually any conference simply because all the facilities are readily available. Three summer institutes for teachers were conducted on the campus as part of the 1965 summer sessions. The Ninth Summer Institute for Science and Mathematics Teachers was conducted under a grant from the National Science Foundation, and institutes in French and history were held as well, sponsored by the U.S. Office of Education. The second summer orientation program was held for Alaskan natives to help familiarize them with college life and to help them adjust to new and different surroundings. This program is called COPAN, or College Orientation Program for Alaskan Natives. A summer science training program, seventh of its kind to be held on the university campus, enrolled 24 secondary school students of high ability in biological science, while a creative arts summer camp, which included specialized instruction in creative writing, drama, dance, and art, was scheduled during June. 95 Alaska high school students entered July's summer music camp, where they were instructed in voice, music theory, and music history. It is noteworthy that, except for 3 weeks during the summer, at least one conference was being held on the campus each week, with as many as three conferences being held in a single week. In June, the university entered into a contract with the Office of Economic Opportunity to train 25 men and women for the new VISTA program. VISTA, which stands for Volunteers in Service to America, has gone to work in Alaska as these 25 volunteers were placed in interior and western Alaska communities to work on a variety of local development projects. The courses and programs offered during this year's summer sessions were equivalent in method, content, and credit to courses offered during the regular academic year. Undergraduates were offered a selection of classes that enabled them to accelerate their particular educational program or to remove deficiencies. For the 12th consecutive year, the popular Workshop on Alaska was presented by the university. 1 week after the close of the regular workshop, a special workshop program was presented for the North Star Borough School District, which served as a pre-service program for teachers. And so it goes, each summer, something different and new, each summer something for everybody. Inaugurated in 1947, the summer sessions and conferences became an established part of the regular university curriculum in 1950. Today, as in the past, the university continues to serve Alaskans throughout Alaska. As Alaska grows, the university grows to better serve you. This Is Your University is a weekly transcribed presentation aired by this station as a public service. It is produced by the University Relations Office in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC. Your reporter has been Ken Burton. A 9-foot, 1,500-pound Alaska brown bear towers over you as you walk through the door. A myriad collection of fowl and Alaskan wildlife stare at you through lifeless eyes. Yellowed photographs and 1,000 artifacts of Alaskana invite the curious. This is but one facet of the many-faceted University of Alaska Museum, a small but effective research instrument that contributes immeasurably to the interpretation of Alaska through a diverse and literal lesson in Alaska history. Today, we will look at just one side of the museum's many projects, activities, and work, the exhibits. This is our story today, the University of Alaska Museum, because this is your university. Last year, nearly 30,000 visitors from Antarctica to Barrow viewed displays in the University of Alaska Museum of past and present Alaska. 12,000 Alaskans, including almost 1,000 children, signed in, and 15,000 visitors came from the other 49 states. The museum is where visitors start to realize what we have in Alaska, says Museum Director Lou Rowinski. Indeed, one of the first things a visitor learns is that Alaska has three different native cultures, the Indian, Eskimo, and Aleut. If you visit the museum, you will find a 54-foot display of interior and Arctic animals on the north balcony of the second level. We try to show as many animals as possible in their native habitat, says Rowinski. One display is devoted to Carl Ben Eielson, pioneer Arctic aviator, for which Eielson Air Force Base, located 26 miles south of Fairbanks, is named. Eielson pioneered airmail delivery in Alaska in the 1920s, and he and Sir Hubert Wilkins were the first men to fly across the Arctic Ocean. One of Eielson's aircraft, a JN-5 Jenny, is still intact, but the museum lacks space to properly display it. Near a gas tank from the dirigible Norge, which made transpolar flight history by traveling from Rome, Italy, to Teller, Alaska in 33 days in 1926, are the skis that Roald Amundsen carried on his famed 1925 North Pole expedition. Five display cases of archaeological material are interspersed with plaques describing the migration of man, major archaeological sites of Russian Siberia and the Western Arctic, and current archaeological research. On the museum's east balcony, you'll see moose, bison, and goat heads, and on the end, a pair of moose antlers remained interlocked for eternity, a monument to the battle that killed them both. Some visitors insist that the museum added the hundreds of feet of wire that surround a set of caribou antlers, but Alaskans know that this is a true wilderness tragedy. All displays are made with the approval of the curators, says Rowinski, and this includes Eskimo clothing, including seal and birdskin parkas, displayed along one wall of the museum. On an overhead ledge rests a 36-foot umiak, or skin boat, from Kotzebue, and a glass case holds artifacts of our Russian past, a brightly colored trunk, copper tea kettles, a brick of trade tea that often took the place of money in early day Alaska, and a heavy padlock, supposedly once used in an old Russian jail in Kodiak. A large map of the state is color-coded to show Athabascan, Ayak, and the southeastern Alaska Tlingit and Haida Indian culture areas, as well as the northern and southern Eskimo regions. And there is more. Much, much more. As Mr. Rowinski points out, there is, in fact, a whole warehouse full. This, then, is your museum. It belongs to each and every Alaskan from Ketchikan to Barrow. Robert Service once said he never wanted to return to Alaska. He just wanted to remember how it was. This is one job of the University of Alaska Museum, to show each and every Alaskan how it was. This is Your University is a weekly transcribed presentation aired by this station as a public service and is produced by the University Relations Office in cooperation with the University radio station, KUAC. Your narrator has been Ken Burton. the largest freshman class in the history of the University of Alaska, was accepted for admission this year. 558 strong, they represent the tiniest and the largest cities and settlements throughout Alaska, 30 other states, and 5 foreign nations. They are better educated and better qualified than their predecessors. These students represent the last of a bumper crop of war babies, children born during World War II, and they are moving toward higher education in one of the most exciting periods of man's history. This is our story today for you, the class of 1969 and the space age, because this is your university. The freshman class entering the university this year represents almost a third of the institution's total full-time on-campus enrollment. 80% are better schooled in languages than were freshmen entering 10 years ago. Also, it is interesting to note that while studies in many secondary schools have remained almost constant in the so-called solid areas, such as math, science, and the like, percentages of students enrolled in the vocational and semi-vocational fields has noticeably dropped, perhaps due in part to the emphasis placed on the more academic skills by a nation that hopes to land a man on the moon by the time this year's freshmen graduate. There was a time when little boys dreamed of being firemen when they grew up, and every little girl wanted to be a nurse. But little boys today want to be astronauts, and the little girls' whims run to many diverse fields other than nursing. And so it is probably safe to assume that this type of thinking is carried along as the child becomes a teenager, and the teenagers, men and women. Answering charges about today's soft young generation, statistics at the university show that freshmen in 1955 had 7% less physical education training than the freshmen of 1965. Well over half of this year's 588 freshmen are Alaskans, and this number includes a small percentage of military dependents. There are representatives from 30 smaller states and one from Washington, D.C. California tops the list in this area, with New York State second. 6 students are from Canada in the class of 1969, 1 from China, 1 from England, 1 from Japan, and 1 from Yugoslavia. They have come to the university campus from as far south as Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, and as far east as Massachusetts, Vermont, and Connecticut. Alaskans have come from all points in the state, and the respective cities' representation here seems to coincide with their population. Anchorage and Fairbanks have the greater number, followed by Juneau, Ketchikan, Palmer, and Sitka. Every major city and the majority of the towns and settlements throughout the state are represented. Men outnumber the women this year by a ratio of about 3-1, a situation the girls find understandably pleasant. The first week was a busy one for new freshmen. It was filled with testing sessions, health examinations, orientation meetings and campus tours, counseling sessions, and just waiting in long lines to pay fees for books and tuition. Then the collegians settled down to the business at hand, learning. They made decisions about subjects and courses, bought books and met professors. The first day of classes and assignments indeed removed any doubts that may have existed in their minds about truly being university students. This is the largest freshman class in the university's 48-year history. The class of 1969 outnumbers last year's freshmen by nearly 100 students. This, then, is the class of 1969, a group of young men and women studying in a frontier land in a frontier space age. They are your investment in Alaska's future, and the future looks bright indeed. This is Your University is a weekly transcribed presentation aired by this station as a public service. It is produced by the University Relations Office in cooperation with the university radio station, KUAC. Your narrator has been Ken Burton. Besides the faculty and staff that keep a complex institution the size of the University of Alaska operating, there is a small group of leading Alaskan citizens from several Alaskan cities whose decisions probably directly affect the formal educational aspirations of more Alaskans than anyone else in the state. What is this group? Who are they? They are the Board of Regents, and they are the men and women who guide Alaska's State University. This, then, is our story today, The Guiding Hands, the story of the Board of Regents on This Is Your University. Who are the Regents? Where are they from? Well, they are from five Alaskan cities, representing the westernmost coast, the interior, south central, and southeastern portions of the state of Alaska. They include Elmer E. Rasmussen, president of the Board of Regents, who is also presently mayor of the city of Anchorage; William A. O'Neill, vice president, also of Anchorage; Dorothy Reed of Fairbanks, who is the board secretary; John J. Conway of Sitka; Ruth McLean of Nome; Robert McFarlane of Anchorage; and Dr. William Whitehead of Juneau; and Dr. Arthur Scheibel of Fairbanks. Dr. William R. Wood, president of the university, sits on the board as an ex officio member. Each region is appointed by the governor of the state and in turn confirmed by the state legislature. Terms vary in much the same way as congressional terms. Last week, the regents of the University of Alaska completed their fall session. Among points discussed was the new Anchorage Community College facility, which the Anchorage Citizens Advisory Group not only heartily recommended, but urged be doubled in size as well. There was talk about what is referred to popularly as the university's West Ridge Project, where two new dormitories, one four-story women's residence and one men's eight-story residence, have been erected, where a great Arctic research complex is growing. Going by the university's long-term expansion plans, this is only a beginning, for someday, and probably in the not-too-distant future, the university's West Ridge will undoubtedly be a second center of campus activity. The regents had this to consider, and much, much more. For example, if student enrollment projection figures hold true, and they have in the past, the university may plan on 8,000 or more students on the main campus by 1980, only 15 years away. This means planning on a priority scale for an enrollment jump of almost 80% in a relatively short period of time. And so a review of an updated master plan for campus development was completed. The 1966-67 budget was approved for presentation to Governor Egan, and then on the final day of the three-day meet, the regents met in the home of President Wood with members of the North Star Borough Assembly, the borough for the greater Fairbanks area. Unique among institutions of higher learning in the United States, the University of Alaska serves, within the scope of its resources, all of the public higher educational needs beyond high school of an entire state. It is the job of these citizens, the Board of Regents, to ensure that the university serves effectively and efficiently each and every Alaskan desiring to further his education beyond the secondary level. These are the men and women who ensure Alaska's future by serving the needs of Alaskans. These are the regents who are building your state university. They are the guiding hands. This Is Your University is a weekly transcribed feature aired by this station as a public service. It is produced by the University Relations Office in cooperation with the University radio station KUAC. Your narrator has been Ken Burton. An English course designed to aid students for whom English is a second language is now being offered at the University of Alaska. 17 Alaskans and foreign students from 7 other nations are enrolled in the class and learning English through writing and speech laboratories and individual tutoring. This is our story today, A Second Language, on This Is Your University. This class, designed to give some of our students their second language, is linguistically oriented and works with the phonetic structure of English, emphasizing pitch, juncture, and stress, speech elements which may carry as much as 40% of meaning, according to Professor Joseph Auerbach, who teaches the class. In writing, sentence patterns are used as building blocks to build up the grammatical structure of English, and according to Dr. Joseph Meeker, who is head of the university's English department, this program represents the first concrete step taken toward a built-in problem that the university has faced since its inception 48 years ago. That problem being simply that the school is in the middle of a large non-English culture area. With this new class, however, it is hoped that many students may now get a college education who perhaps had been hindered in the past by the fact that they just didn't know English. Professor Auerbach is new to the University of Alaska faculty this year, coming to our main campus from the University of Southern California, where he taught for 3 years in the English Communications Program for foreign students. This new class is the very beginning of a new program in Alaska, says Professor Auerbach, and it really presents a challenge. Right now, there are 64,000 foreign students who study yearly in United States universities and colleges. Most have some working knowledge of English, but not enough to let them succeed in the classroom. They need further work to communicate successfully. Thus, no credit service classes, such as the one just started at the University of Alaska, have been inaugurated. These classes aid the students' comprehension and helps them feel confident so they can function successfully in a classroom and complete their college work. In the class, the students are split into several sections. There is one section for the foreign students and another for those who perhaps know English but have difficulty in communication. These students, in technical terminology, have difficulty with what we call the separa-segmented elements of speech, again the juncture, pitch, and stress, which carry as much as 40% of the meaning of our conversation. Working in a language lab, these students work to improve their syntax, the process by which one expresses clear thoughts to another person by a logical placement of words in speech. They work on grammatic structure, on transformational grammar, using sentence patterns and other verbal tools. Eventually, the students begin building a structure of the English language. Auerbach pointed out that the ideal classroom situation is, of course, to have all the students be of one nationality. In cases such as this, the phonetic work can proceed much faster. When the students come in, says Auerbach, they speak little or no English, influenced by the grammatical structure of another language. And this, of course, is one of the very basic reasons for having such a class in the first place. Of course, English as spoken in America can be particularly frustrating to a foreign student. With the thousands of slang terms, it is no wonder. But there is a beginning here now, and Professor Auerbach is enthusiastic and optimistic about the new program. He hopes to see it expand to meet the need, as that need may arise, so that no students may be deprived of an education because he couldn't really comprehend a professor's lecture, because he could read but really didn't understand yesterday's newspaper, or because he could carry on a conversation but was a little confused about what the words meant that he used. For these students, now there is hope, and more important, there is promise. This Is Your University is a weekly transcribed feature presented by this station as a public service. It is produced by the University Relations Office in cooperation with the university radio station, KUAC. Your narrator has been Ken Burton.